From Entrepreneur Media, this is Problem Solvers, a show in which entrepreneurs do what entrepreneurs do best, solve unexpected problems in their business.
We were completely wrong.
And I'm just like, it's not selling.
It was like, we have to start from scratch.
I'm Jason Pfeiffer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine. In 2013, Jennifer Fitzgerald and her co-founder were trying to think of names for their new insurance company. And they looked around the marketplace and saw a pattern.
I don't know if you've paid attention to insurance, there tend to be a lot of animal mascots, like the Geico Gecko, kind of, you know, makes it more approachable, I guess. So we were attached initially to the owl.
The owl. It's friendly, it's considered wise, it can probably eat like 20 geckos for lunch for what it's worth. So they started riffing on it, and soon they had a name. Know It Owl.
So it was what we thought a clever play on the term know it all, but Know It Owl, O-W-L, because we thought it conveyed our approach to insurance, which was around guidance, making smart decisions. You're a know-it-owl. And that was a terrible idea.
Here's the thing about company names. It is one of, if not the, biggest early decisions that a company founder will make, and they often get it wrong. I mean, just look at history. Google was first called Backrub. Can you believe? Best Buy was originally Sound of Music. eBay was Auction Web. Nike was Blue Ribbon Sports. Subway was Pete's Super Submarines. Facebook was the Facebook. Well, I guess that last one isn't really a good example. But for most entrepreneurs, naming their company is really hard, and the risks of getting it wrong are high.
We thought it was clever and the .com domain was available for like $10. And we were like, oh, this was great. And then, you know, we started talking to investors, engaging our first users, talking to vendors and insurance company partners, and just kept having to repeat the name, spell it, explain it. And pretty soon we were like, oh, we got a problem. We're going to have to change this.
But to fix this problem, Jennifer and her team didn't just sit around in a room throwing out names. That is how they got to Know It Owl. And Jennifer and her co-founder had come from the consulting firm McKinsey. They are process people. They are all about stress testing ideas. So when they decided to change the name of their company, they went through a really fascinating, thorough process. And it's one that I think every entrepreneur can learn from, whether they're happy with their company name or not, because the rigor of it and the way that they guided their creativity can apply in so many situations. Today, Know It Owl is now called Policy Genius, and that's all one word, by the way, with only the P capitalized. Policy Genius. The company helps people shop for insurance, and last year helped 50 million people do that, which Jennifer says is through a combination of people using its platform and reading the content it produces. And Policy Genius now employs 150 people and sees revenue growing by 300%. So it certainly sounds like the name Policy Genius is working for it. So on today's episode of Problem Solvers, it's the story of how Know It All became Policy Genius. And we're going to go from O to P right after this break. People hate calling companies and not getting an answer. And frankly, companies hate missing calls and missing potential new customers. And yet, so much ringing. That is what Ruby Receptionists is designed to solve. All of your calls are answered live by a team of friendly, professional remote receptionists helping you secure customers and build a thriving company. From their offices in Portland, Oregon, Ruby delivers exceptional experiences to your callers by answering calls in English or Spanish, transferring calls, taking messages, addressing common questions, making follow-up calls, and more, just like an in-house receptionist at a fraction of the cost. Most importantly, they sound like they're sitting in your office. To learn more or get started, visit them online at callruby.com. Or better yet, call them 855-330-LIVE. That's 855-330-LIVE. They will pick up. And now our second sponsor. Can flushing the toilet light up your house? It's the kind of thing discussed on Waterline, a new podcast about the economic, political, social, behavioral, technological, and environmental aspects of water around the globe, as well as the latest scientific advancements and technical solutions to create efficient water usage and make water safe for everyone. Waterline Podcast is an initiative of Israel New Tech, a part of the Israeli Ministry of Economy and Industry. And I'd recommend starting with their episode on drip irrigation, an agricultural innovation that proves everything can continue to be improved upon. Search Waterline Podcast on iTunes or in your Android podcast app. All right, we're back. So before we get into how Know-It-Owl became Policy Genius, let's understand where Know-It-Owl came from in the first place. And I don't mean the name, I mean the idea for the company. So Jennifer and her co-founder were both consultants at McKinsey, as I'd said before, and that gave them an up-close look at the insurance industry.
I'd spent about 5 years deep in the bowels of the insurance industry, helping insurance companies with everything from like marketing to growth strategy to operations, you name it. And one of the recurring challenges we get kept getting called in to solve was around distribution, right? The main distribution channel for insurance in the U.S. is still the insurance agent, like the brick and mortar guy. And the average age of an insurance agent in this country is 59, right? So if you do the math, that distribution channel is basically going to retire in 5 years, and the insurance companies didn't know what to do about it.
She sees an opening here. Insurance agents are going to be disappearing, and insurance companies are going to need some other way to reach consumers. So why not build a digital do-it-yourself experience where a customer can search for and then sign up for the right insurance policy for them? And we're talking everything here: life, disability, health, renters. She's imagining like the Expedia of insurance. And building this was a really interesting process because insurance is not only very complicated and frustrating, but it's also something consumers are used to talking to an actual human about. So how do you build software that not only reproduces the experience, but also makes it even more efficient?
We do a process called the Google Design Sprint. So you basically go from whiteboard to a user-tested prototype in like 5 days.
Essentially, they speed test ideas. Design something, test it out, learn, all really fast. I asked her why they wanted to move that fast, and she said there were a couple reasons. Number one, especially for a startup with not a lot of cash on hand, time is money, so you need to move quickly. And two, moving fast forces you to crystallize and focus on the problem without getting into endless brainstorming sessions. And I'm sure we have all been in endless brainstorming sessions. So the first step in this design sprint is to think about similar experiences that you really like. And they thought about TurboTax, a simple system to do a complicated task. The next step is to think about what problem your new company is trying to solve.
And so for health insurance, the problem to solve is, how do I pick the plan that's right for me? And how do I feel confident that I've picked the right plan?
In one of their earliest iterations, they'd ask people for all sorts of data, like their budget, what they spent on healthcare last year, how many people are in their household, and so on. And then they'd crunch the data and, ta-da, present them with the right plan.
People didn't trust it, right? Because they're automatically saying, well, how do I know that's the right plan for me? What aren't you showing me? Am I missing something?
So they do another 5-day design sprint, and then another and another, until they finally came to this system in which they'd show consumers all of the trade-offs they're making. Like, the system lays it all out. You can toggle the size of your deductible and see how it changes which plan is right for you, that sort of thing. And by the way, before we move on to the part of the story about the naming, I had to ask Jennifer, why is there this need for a middleman at all? Like, why does an insurance agent exist? Why can't I just go call up an insurance company, my insurance company, and they'll talk to me like any other company selling me any other product? Because if you'll forgive a little rant here, I absolutely hate talking to insurance agents. They're often very nice and helpful, yes, but I know that my insurance policy is more expensive because they exist, and it angers me. It genuinely angers me that I cannot just cut them out and save some money by doing some research and buying straight from the insurance company. And Jennifer's answer to this is basically, this is the way it's just the way the industry thinks. That's it. I mean, they focus on mitigating risk and not on dealing with consumers, and it's just not going to change.
You know, I spent a lot of time, several years, consulting with insurance companies when I was at McKinsey, and you'd be surprised to hear things like, our customer is the agent. So they think about the agent because this is the sales force that sells the product. So
they wonder why their actual customer hates them.
Right. And they're very disconnected from that end customer who's actually buying the product.
All right. Hopeless. So the name. So this little insurance company of Jennifer's starts developing in 2013, and they go all in on that name, Know-It-Owl. They even commission someone to draw a little owl mascot, and they start calling him Virgil, as in the guy who guides you through the circles of hell in Dante's Inferno, because insurance is basically every circle of hell. And remember what they were going for here. They wanted a friendly, clever name that would make insurance more approachable. They wanted to convey that their company was a helping hand, a beacon of humanity in the cold, harsh night of insurance shopping. But investors, partners, and others just didn't take them seriously with a name like Know-It-Owl. It had to go. So Jennifer started researching more methodical ways to pick a name and developed a multi-step action plan. And the first step was just to gather as many options as possible.
There are sites online called like Naming Force, Hatchwise, Squad Lab, where you can kind of tap into the hive mind. They run naming contests for you. So we didn't crowdsource it, but that's one of the options out there. What we did was we generated our own list of names. So one thing that we did to kind of allow creativity to take its natural course, we just had a running Google Doc where members of the team could put in, you know, names as it occurred to them.
And as this went on, they tried to focus their team's efforts. There'd be times where they'd all try portmanteaus like Microsoft, which is a combination of microcomputer and software. Or they'd try adding numbers to words like Lot 18, the wine marketplace. Or themes like trees. Everyone came up with a name that references a tree.
So we went through those exercises. And then one Saturday, we brought in the team. We were five people at the time, and some of our creative friends in the branding and marketing industry, and did structured group brainstorming. So what we did was we put a name on the board that was related to the company and our mission, which is around financial protection insurance. So I think the first word we put up was protection. And then you have 10 minutes. Each person has a sheet of paper, and they write 10 names down. And then after that, they pass the paper to the person on their left, and then there's 7 minutes, and then you have to generate seven names using the words that the person before you did as creative inspiration.
And you do that a couple of times. By the way, it's important to know that they were all treating this like a fun exercise. Like, there was pizza and beer in the room, and they tried to bring in the most creative people they know. I mean, this thing may be structured, but structure is supposed to direct creativity, not dampen it, right? So now they have this long list of names, and the name Policy Genius was on that big list of theirs. So now the next question is, how do you start whittling down the list to the best possible option?
You can throw out the clear garbage ones right away. We had a round where we were fixated on animals, and so we had names like Harmadillo, Harm, Property and Casualty Insurance. That was pure garbage.
Hey, looking for a company name? Harmadillo is officially available.
And so that first filter is, can you imagine saying your company name to a Wall Street Journal reporter, right? If you can't, throw it out there, right? The second batch of calling is really around, are any of these similar to competitors? You want to do a trademark search to eliminate ones right away. Something you want to test for kind of unintentional obscenity, right? The common example is Penn Island when you put it together in a domain name. Mm-hmm. Yep. So you want to avoid Penn Island or Speed of Art. Another one where you put it together, you're not going to like what comes out.
I know I was also trying to really quickly think through that one. So you could just take a second. Speed of Art, put the words together. Speed of Art, Speedo. There you go. And after you've gotten rid of all the Speedo farts, you need to take the names that are left and start searching for domain names. That can be brutal, Jennifer says. There's a name you love, but the .com is taken, and then you start bargaining with yourself. Well, could we do a .net, a .co? For Jennifer, a .com was a must.
And then finally, and I was digging through a lot of research to look for a more scientific approach to how you test kind of finalist names. And there was a really great framework that we found where you do kind of red, yellow, green grading on some criteria. So the criteria are like brevity, shorter is better.
In other words, for each potential company name, you look at different criteria and give it a red, yellow, or green for each of those criteria. For Policy Genius, it would get a yellow for brevity. It isn't super short, but it also isn't absurdly long. And there are others.
Evocativity. So does the name kind of convey what it is that you do? This one was really helpful, which was grepability. So can you, so grepping is from, you know, some programming language. So can you find the term, right? So a non-grepable name, for example, would be T-I-O-N. Because there's so many words in the English language that have T-I-O-N as a suffix, like communication, information. So if somebody were searching for T-I-O-N, they couldn't find you because it's buried under a whole bunch of words. So You don't want to use something that's common like that. It hadn't even occurred to us. And we were like, oh, yeah, that totally makes sense.
And after all of that, look at what you have left and test it for hearability and pronounceability. If somebody sees the word, can they pronounce it? If they hear it, can they spell it? And that's not an exercise you want to trust with just the people in the room. So Jennifer and her team, when they were done with their own evaluating, it was time to show it to real people in the real world and see what they really thought. You can go to a service like Mechanical Turk or SurveyMonkey, and they'll survey a lot of people in a short time, and you could just see what the public reacts to. Jennifer's team did this. They paid a company to survey 1,000 readers at a cost of about $2 a respondent.
We, recorded a sample on SoundCloud, said each possible name, and we asked the person to spell what they heard so we could see if people could actually spell it when they hear it. Then we also tested for memorability. So we put the 8 different names, and then you give them busy work, like here's a simple math problem, here's a paragraph to read, what's the third word in the paragraph? Then after you do a couple busy work problems, you go back and say, okay, what were the, try to remember all the names that we asked you about at the beginning, right? To see if they could come up, which ones came up more often and were most memorable. And then the last one was just around emotional association. So for each names, what do you think of? What emotions do you feel? Just to make sure that nothing was offensive or conjuring up any emotions that we didn't want to conjure up.
And that got them to the winner. Policy Genius stood out among all. At first, they launched with Policy Genius as all one word, but the G was capitalized for readability. But eventually, they found that the capital G was leading people to split the name up into 2 words, which was even more wrong. So they just made the G lowercase and found that it didn't really hurt readability. So great. And now, remember how Jennifer wanted the name of her company to be friendly and stand out as human in this world of insurance? The name Policy Genius sort of does that, I guess, in that it's a little playful, but certainly not as playful as Noah Dowell. And yet, there is an important lesson here about cleverness in business. The key is to know where and when to be clever. Because while a name may not be the great place for too much cleverness, that doesn't mean that a company has to always talk or act with a straight face. And if you've ever encountered Policy Genius's marketing, you know exactly what I'm talking about. The first time I'd heard of Policy Genius, in fact, was actually on the New York subway while commuting one morning to the Entrepreneur Magazine office. I'd glanced over at what at first looked like another subway poem, and in case you don't know, since 1992, the Transit Authority here has put up posters with poetry on them in a program they call Poetry in Motion. And I'll be honest, I don't like that. I don't like the poetry. I mean, my reaction to most of it is like, hey, poet, what are you talking about? And then one day I read this poem called Birth, which went like this. I'm going to be a little poetic here. What does it mean to catch a butterfly, to hold beauty in your hands, the caterpillar reborn? This subway poem is going off topic. To be honest, this isn't our forte at all. However, we are very good at comparing life insurance online. And underneath it said, Policy Genius.
Interestingly, we've kind of angered the poets of New York because they thought they were like another piece of art defiled by corporate cynicism, which wasn't our intention. It was just a good-natured parody of a form that every New Yorker is familiar with.
But as I told Jennifer when we talked, I loved that ad because it was so spot on. Like most ads that target New Yorkers feel pandering and not very local. They're just like, how about how crowded it is? Or like, hey, New Yorkers like ordering delivery or whatever. Like stuff you can just get by watching TV. But this poetry ad really played on a specific thing that New Yorkers know. And it was funny, at least to me, and friendly, and it got me to read something about insurance, and even better, I remembered the name Policy Genius because of it. And that is pretty much all you can ask for in a name. And that's our episode. But wait, before you go, please hear me out on a few ways you can stay in touch with the show and contact me directly. First of all, if you like the show, it would be amazing if you subscribe to it on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Problem Solvers. That way, you'll never miss an episode. We come out every Monday morning. Also, I love hearing from listeners. You can go to jasonpfeiffer.com. That's J-A-S-O-N, F as in Frank, E-I, F as in Frank, E-R.com, where you'll find my email address, social media handles, and also you can sign up for my monthly newsletter, The Pfeiffer 5, which is 5 monthly insights and bursts of inspiration for entrepreneurs. It's basically a collection of the ideas that excited me the most that month. So please go check it out. And that's again, jasonpfeiffer.com. And if you want to drop me a line directly, please let me know about the problems you've solved, and I might have you read the letter in a future episode of the show. We can all learn from each other, and that also means you. Problem Solvers is a production of Entrepreneur Media, and this episode was edited by Conrad Martin. We are also online at entrepreneur.com. Again, I'm Jason Pfeiffer. Thanks for listening, and now go solve some problems.